Today on the Inland Journal podcast, we talk with two of the most powerful people in Spokane County who are not elected. We're talking about Teresa Sanders, the administrator of the city of Spokane, and Jerry Gemmel, the CEO of Spokane County. They join us to talk about how their entities work together on a range of issues and which of those issues are getting their most attention.
Jerry Gemmel, I'm the CEO of Spokane County. I've been back. This is my second tour of duty. I've been back for about 3.5 years. I worked there before. I started as a road laborer in 1975 and retired as the county's operations director in 2008. I went to work for the city of Spokane as the deputy public works utility director, and then I was the interim public works and utility director, and then I went to work for the mayor's office when Mayor Condon took over, and I was trying to remember, it was a long title, Intergovernmental Affairs and Labor Issues, I believe.
Sounds about right.
It was about right. It was a good time. And I did take a short break. I went over to work for Whitworth as their vice president of finance and administration. And then the county approached me about maybe coming back as the CEO, and I came back. And
so you replaced Marshall Farnell.
I did. Marshall and I worked together for years and years and years, very close. He was a great CEO.
So who was the mayor when you went to the city in 2008?
Mary Verner.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
In fact, Teresa and I, when I first worked with Teresa, she was down in the economic development mm-hmm. wing of the city when I came over as the deputy director of public works.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Teresa, a little about your background.
So, Teresa Sanders, I'm the city administrator for the city of Spokane, and that's the chief operating officer role. The bulk of my career was actually spent in the private sector, working in the tech sector. I'm a returnee to Spokane, so grew up here, but spent nearly 20 years on the west side of the state, and delighted to be back here. Could have lived anywhere, pleased to be back here. My work with Mayor Condon is actually my third mayor. I went to work for Mayor Heschen, and then Mary Verner rapidly came into office, and I spent about 2 years with Mayor Verner, departed the city, took a little bit of time off, and then came back in with Mayor Condon and been serving with him for 7.5 years in this role and working with my friend Jerry at the county. Jerry's correct. I started my stint at the city of Spokane. Mayor Heschen asked, would you consider coming to work for the city? And I thought, no, that doesn't make any sense for somebody with my background. But I adored Dennis and thought, well, this would be an interesting experience. And it was. I got my own civics lesson on how city government works. And it was really good for me. And then really delighted knowing a little bit about the city to be able to come back with Mayor Condon and work in this role.
So you do essentially the same role. It's just that you're doing it for different entities. And what is your job about?
Well, when I'm asked that, you know, what does a CEO actually do for the county, the analogy that I use, it's not really much different than, let's say, the CEO for Avista, who is charged with the operations of Avista and their 2,000 employees and their product lines and answers to a board of directors. Teresa and I, actually, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, the organizations have 2,000 plus people, there's $750 million budgets in the county, and the difference is I answer to three commissioners versus a board of shareholders, and instead of customers, because we think of all of our constituents as customers, we refer to them as constituents. So it's very similar to any other CEO running a business.
It's just that you're juggling pretty much everything that's done within the city or the county.
One of the things that, and I'm sure Teresa's in the same places, I've been not only fortunate, I'd use the word blessed, I have had at the city and at the county, I've had excellent department heads. They make me look way smarter than I am every day, and I'm very appreciative of that. So,
yeah, really well put. Our roles are a little bit different operationally because mm-hmm. we do get a bit more into the day-to-day, and really the city administrator role is designed that way. In its simplest form at the city, the mayor, all of the entire organization reports to the mayor, with the exception of the legislative body and those support roles. And so the mayor gets to decide what the city's direction is, and the city administrator decides how it gets done. So it's the implementation, much to, similar to what Jerry does. My goal is to achieve the mayor's goals. That's what the city administrator's for.
So the mayor would come to you and say, we want to do this initiative, figure out how to do it?
Exactly right. The perfect example is early in Mayor Condon's term, citizens were concerned about utility rates. So we had to get utility rates to a level that citizens could afford. So we assemble a team of people and we work that out and did that. And it's that exact same kind of thing that we do every day.
So you talk about working for a board of directors. In your case, it's three people. In Teresa's case, it's seven people. What is that relationship all about? Your folks work day to day at the county. Your folks are full-time employees. Your constituents are part-time, technically, and really not full-time. So what? How do you work with them day to day?
Well, and Teresa made a good point. One of the biggest differences between the governance structure of trying to run the business that Teresa has and I have is I have so many more electeds. They have a city council, obviously, but I, you know, we have the sheriff, we have the judges, we have the clerk, we have the auditor, and we help them and we provide services. But technically, at least, the only thing that the board actually does is set their budget. And then they're a separately elected, and they pretty well do their own business. So that it's a unique, it's kind of a unique structure. It's been a county structure since I think the state is probably what was got statehood in most of the counties. It's as far as our commissioners, the closest thing I could say is they're in a way like three strong mayors. If you were trying to make a gap. I mean, Mayor Condon, he is the only mayor and stuff, but they have financial issues. They're quasi legal, and they obviously, operate the budgets of the county for the county. So it's unique. I don't know which is more efficient, to be honest with you, because they're just two different forms of government. The other thing I wanted to say, and this is where Teresa's has been a really good ally of me, the other unique part is Teresa serves her constituents very well, which is the folks of the citizens of Spokane. The uniqueness of the county is everybody's our constituent, no matter whether you live in a city or not. Everybody's our constituent.
And we frequently have to remind each other that my city is in your county and your county is also responsible for my city. Mm-hmm. The line of authority at the city is actually a little bit more straightforward because we have a strong mayor form of government at the city and the 2,000 employees of the city are accountable to the mayor. It's really clear where the direction is coming from. The legislative body, the separate branch of government, the opportunity there has been really looking for those areas where we have alignment. We all know that we could spend a lot of time arguing over a lot of things, but the good news is it turns out there's a lot of things that we agree on and can move on together. And the more we can do that collaboratively, the faster we can get things done. So that's the reason that we created the Joint Administration City Council Strategic Plan and really identified the things that we could move forward together. And I think that relationship works really well. The city council ultimately has the financial authority within the budget to make lots of choices financially. We hand that budget off in a way that we think is healthy and sustainable, and then really the city council has the authority to manage that budget as they choose, and then we administratively do the very best we can managing within those parameters.
So how do you two work together and your respective staffs work together? Do you have regular meetings? I mean, you're here in the same room, but how often do you actually see each other in the course of a week?
Teresa and I have a unique relationship. I mean, we have similar roles, but we've been coworkers before. We're friends. I think the city is extremely lucky to have Teresa as a city administrator. It's a relationship that's based on, I don't hesitate to pick up the phone. She doesn't hesitate to pick up the phone. I heard this, what's going on? How can we work this out? Probably somewhat unique, just because of our backgrounds and our lives have intersected each other for a long time. So very honest, we just say it as it is, deal with it and move on. And
thank you for that, Jerry, because it really has been a wonderful partnership. We have enjoyed it immensely. From a practical perspective, Jerry and I sit on two boards commonly, mm-hmm. the Spokane Regional Emergency Communications Board we both sit on and the West Plains Public Development Board we both sit on, so we see each other there for operational types of issues. We also have a relatively newly formed regional governance board, which is combined city and county resources to work on regional strategies. We've been doing that for about 4 years now, and mm-hmm. it's been super successful. So we see each other there. And then we kind of joke, it's like my Wednesday afternoons are mostly at the county, just working on various meetings
should
and projects.
Should give her an office. Should just have her open up an office.
And they're very good to me. They give me coffee the minute I walk in the door. And we're, yeah. And Jerry's correct, too. It has been, it's been such a unique opportunity because we've known each other. You know, relationships begin with trust. Mm-hmm. And I trust that Jerry has the interests of the citizens of the city of Spokane, as well as the rest of the citizens' interests in mind. And so it's a really good starting point. We don't have to begin by, you know, wondering what one another are up to. We're really just trying to solve problems. And there are plenty of problems for us to focus on.
One of the other things I think that was a great initiative that started in the mayor's office is that once a month, the mayor and Teresa and whoever cabinet members need to be there, their executive staff, I like to call them, meet with whoever's the chair of the board at the time. And these are very open, informal, wide-ranging discussions. I think a lot of progress has been made in those that if we didn't have that opportunity to meet on a regular basis, you know, may have been lost opportunities. One of the things I'd like to point out that shows, and Teresa hit it right on the head, I'm going to go back to the whole West Plains PDA and then the Amazon issue. When Trammell Crow was here, and that's the folks that actually build these Amazons, we had a room full. Teresa was there. I was there. There was a whole bunch of folks there, her excellent staff and mine. And we're trying to figure out how this is all going to work and how we can make this happen. The person from Trammell Crow commented later that was one of the most unique places they'd ever been. Every decision maker that they needed was there, and they could not tell who was a city employee and who was a county employee, or even who was a Department of Transportation employee. And that just shows you the uniqueness of the relationship that we have with our partners across the river.
Now I want to go back because we've all been around quite a while. It hasn't always been that way. I mean, sometimes the city and the county haven't worked well. The city has had a different form of government. What about transitions? With the 2019 city election, you're going to have a new mayor, you're going to have a new county council president, maybe one or two new council members. How do you as a city administrator deal with that transition and looking forward to it?
So great question. It's obviously very much on our mind, and we're being very thoughtful about how we do what I'll say is an elegant job of handing off this administration. I think Jerry said it best earlier, where what gives me the most confidence in a really elegant handoff are the amazing 2,000 people that work there. You go to our department heads, to that, and to our line staff folks, they know what they're doing. They're very competent, professional people, and they will do what they do. They'll serve the citizens as they've intended to do. We want to make sure that we have a very healthy and understandable budget that we're handing off, that at some point during our progression post-election, that we're inviting new electeds in and giving them the opportunity to begin staffing up as they find necessary, whatever we can do to help facilitate that. In the meantime, we're just trying to be an access point for all of our employees. As you can imagine, it's unsettling, especially this is the first time we've had a lame duck mayor, a transition of this time in, 45 years or so. And so it's unsettling. And so we're trying to make sure that we're accessible to our folks, that they have a place to go if they have concerns or are feeling in any way untethered or insecure, that we're all in this together. And I think people are really warming up to the idea of really doing a great transition, something that we can be proud of.
So, Jerry, as you look three blocks down the road and you look at a 2019 election, city election, county went through its own election, one new member, actually two, because Mary Cuny had already been part of the commission mm-hmm. for a little while. How do you view the transition from the city's point of for the city?
Well, I think Teresa's right. I mean, the employees that work at the city are awesome, and they're very talented. And if whoever wins the election, whoever comes in, if they can lean into their staff, and they will do everything they can to make them successful. From the county's point of view, and like I was saying, it's kind of bittersweet to me personally, because you know there's a lot of my friends, and they were my coworkers too, that you know I'm not going to have the chance to work with. And, you know, whoever takes her place will be fine, and we will work really hard at the county to have good relationships. But, you know, it's been years and years, you know, like Teresa says, we haven't had a two-term mayor. We haven't had a stability for this long, at least in my career, since I went to work for the local government. And it's going to be an interesting transition. I'm very optimistic, though, that regardless of who comes in as mayor or who might be the other council members, you know, I've got to trust that they have the best interests of their public in mind. And if they do, we'll get along fine.
So you both have end terms for your particular jobs, do you not? So when do you finish your time at the county and the city?
I finish with Mayor Condon, so I'll be done at the end of this year.
And Jerry?
I extended my contract, and so my contract now ends a year from the end of this month.
Okay, so you have a little more than a year. So how do you then train your... if you get a chance to train your successors and carry that transition mm-hmm. on.
So my great hope is that immediately following the election, the incoming mayor will name a city administrator. And from that moment, we'll begin working together, making the introductions, making sure that people have a really deep understanding of where the connections already are. So that's the plan. And I think we can execute that really well.
So what are the things that you will teach that person? What are the little roadblock sorts of things that are important for them to know, to understand, to deal with, you know, your electeds or the other side or, you know, the state or whatever it is? What are the important messages you want to pass on?
Well, my advice to my successor or even Teresa, whoever comes in as the new city administrator, is, you know, you need to be tenacious and don't lose sight of the prize. Don't allow yourself to get derailed. I mean, the reality is we work in a political environment, and you know, it has its own advantages and challenges. And if you and Teresa, in a lot of respects, is my hero when it comes to this. If you're tenacious and you're doing what's right and your motives are right, you'll get to where you need to be. And that would be my message to anybody that has taken Teresa's place.
So what are you going to say? What would you pass along?
I would say take the time to learn really quickly how smart and capable your people mm-hmm. are, because you cannot lift a big organization with a couple of people from the top. You simply cannot, and why would you want to? I would say the relationships with partners are everything. So we talk a lot about collaboration, but it's a real thing. If you want to achieve an outcome, especially those things worth doing, the big, you know, really gnarly, complex projects, it takes time and it takes a degree of patience, which Jerry will attest is not exactly my strong suit. So he anchors me beautifully. But you have to be able to get people to the table to grasp your vision before you can move. You can't do anything unilaterally, so don't expect to.
We're talking with Teresa Sanders, the chief administrator for the city of Spokane, and Jerry Gemmel, the CEO for Spokane County, here on the Inland Journal podcast. Let's spend a few minutes on the two or three issues that we're asking all the candidates about. And let's start with one that's usually third on the list, the jail. How do the city and the county work together to talk about what the next step is for a potential new facility, or whether there is a new facility on the horizon?
Well, we've had, as Teresa said, with our regional governance group that's been meeting and stuff, we've been very collaborative, if not only looking at maybe different efficiencies that can be gained in the existing structure, but what would a new structure or structures look like? Had a great conversation with our partners, including the City of the Valley, that has now joined in on our regional group, about, you know, if the community has a desire, which I believe they do, to look at, you know, alternatives to incarceration. What does that look like? And Teresa, I like just what you said. None of us can lift this up by ourselves. We need everybody to be cooperative. And, you know, detention services, is just one part of the whole criminal justice system. And frankly, especially for the county, in our general fund, it is by far the most expensive enterprise that we have. So we have to look at different alternatives, and are there ways of delivering services. One of the first things we need to decide is what is it that, what form of justice are we trying to deliver? That's the first thing that we should look at. Mm-hmm. And then I think the rest of it, you know, falls in line. Teresa can probably speak to this. The city has been looking at, you know, the possibility of maybe building their own structure that takes some of the misdemeanors and stuff. And of course, we would partner, would want to, you know, be part of that discussion too. But it's a very collaborative effort that's going on right now.
What Jerry pointed out is really a critical piece. One of the luxuries of being an operations person is you get to be very practical. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the very expensive criminal justice system that we have and the less than desirable outcomes that we get from those significant investments, again, it's the same citizens paying the bill. The jail is, as Jerry said, one component of the system. What is pretty clear is that we have not a very functional facility, so we've got a facilities issue that we need to address. And in making that investment, we have lots of operational improvements we can make alongside with it. Jerry's also correct that we have to decide first what is it that we're trying to achieve. And then once we do that, which I think we will do in short order, it's going to take a little bit of courage to make a final decision about what that facility's decision is going to be, and then we'll need to move. And that's where the collaboration is going to be more important than ever, because we're going to have to agree on the best path forward for all of us. At the same time, as Jerry points out, the city is looking at what we're broadly referring to as an integrated municipal justice center. The idea there is to co-locate the city's municipal justice systems, the community court, the municipal court, all of our probation officers, public defenders, prosecutors. And what we're looking for there is operational leverage. How do we get more efficient in the way we're managing our systems by being co-located? At the same time, that gives us an opportunity to provide space for misdemeanors that allows us to also provide services. So there we're looking for an opportunity to have something separate from a jail with beds and bars, and a space where we can actually serve people misdemeanors in our facility to get better outcomes in the community. So it's the conversation is gaining traction. The beautiful thing is, and back to the collaboration, I've been talking with the county about this for a while. Mm-hmm. They're not threatened by the conversation. They're looking at it very wisely, saying, what opportunities does this present the broader system? And maybe does the regional model look like misdemeanors in this facility, others in this facility? We don't know yet, but the fact that we're able to have the conversation without threatening one another is wonderful.
Well, and then you have the issue of bringing the public along with mm-hmm. whatever it is, because I think the public is really divided on this issue mm-hmm. regarding do we try to divert more people from the jail versus that idea of, well, but a lot of those people are multiple offenders and belong mm-hmm. behind bars. So yeah. how do you work on that?
I think we have to do all of those things. The challenge that we typically run into in the conversations that we've had about this in the past is, how big is this jail? And that question really isn't about how many beds are in the jail, but what are you putting in the jail? And so I think we have to be able to demonstrate the diversion programs work, that we actually are reducing the incidence of crime in the community. Remember, with the system, we're serving the broader community and victims of crime. We have to be reminded of that. So all of these, we have many opportunities for diversion, and many of them work. Today, both the county and the city have what we call co-deployment teams, where we have mental health professionals with our law enforcement in the field. That is a diversionary tactic. We don't want those folks in our emergency rooms, and we don't want them in our jail. Mm. If we have alternatives, that's awesome. And there are probably, I would say, 4 or 5 of those opportunities that will have a significant impact on what that size of jail actually is. We also agree that some folks need to be held in detention. That is the right thing for the broader community. Mm-hmm. And it's really, how do we get to that sweet spot? What's the balance? And I think once we get there, I think the community will absolutely be there with us if they're not there already. I think they're probably not hearing enough about what diversion are you doing and what works.
And that leads us to the second issue, which is homelessness, which is probably the big issue of this this particular campaign. We've been asking candidates, how has the city been doing with regard to this? And most mm-hmm. feel that it's doing a pretty good job. But there's that, again, that issue between the mother who has three, a single mother has three kids, and the person who's shooting up drugs in
right.
the alley.
Yeah.
So how do the city and county work together to kind of unify your response to that?
Well, again, we've been having some very, you know, open and collaborative discussions. We've been talking about some shelters. In fact, very currently,
yeah.
we've been talking about some shelter space and maybe some other locations. The county has been looking at some various ordinances that camping ordinances and things that the city already has in place. And I believe the City of the Valley has a template we're looking at. The homeless problem is, you know, it's a countywide problem. And not, like I say, again, the city are our constituents, too, the folks who live in the city. I will say, though, I live on the far north side in the unincorporated county, and the homeless issue isn't only in the urban areas. Mm-hmm. It is now starting to show up in the rural areas. And it's going to have to be addressed as a whole community. I don't think, again, one city or one, you know, group of folks can get all the answers to the issue. This is a probably one of the, I would say, the more challenging issues that you have. You have a whole gamut of issues going on: personal rights, private property, the right to assemble. I mean, what do you do with these folks? Do you have services that are available? Is it the drug problems? I also serve on the advisory board for the Salvation Army. And, you know, we see, you know, this need every day, from transitional housing to what the center that we opened up with cooperation with the city last winter. This is a hard one. I mean, this is a hard one to get your arms around about the homeless. But we're working very well with our partners. The City of the Valley, like I say, has joined our regional governance group. Mm-hmm. This topic came up at our last meeting about, you know, is there some alternative shelter spaces that might actually serve the folks better and maybe the community? And I'm confident we'll get an answer to this.
I am as well. I think, you know, for us, again, back to having the luxury of being practical people, we're really trying to solve two challenges that we actually call homelessness. Homelessness is a temporary condition that I would say between the city and the county and a lot of state and federal dollars and a lot of staffing, we've made enormous progress in housing people who mm-hmm. are experiencing homelessness. That's a temporary state. Well, we're also seeing, particularly over the last year or so, a real uptick in vagrancy. Mm-hmm. One of them is addressed by investment and support services and housing. One is addressed by policy and what's allowable in the community. And so I think it doesn't help us to conflate these two things and call them homelessness, because I actually think it's a disservice to folks that are experiencing homelessness to paint with a broad brush the drug use that's happening in the street mm-hmm. with folks that are homeless. It's a very different thing. So as I look at, as an example, the latest point in time count for homelessness showed about 1,300 folks. That number actually hasn't changed dramatically
very much,
over
yeah.
the years. But at that same time, we've housed through housing programs funded by Fed and state about 3,000 people over the last few. So we're doing, I think, a really great job of helping build sustainable lives for folks. What we have to do is really focus on policy around the vagrancy and lawlessness component so that we have policies in place that law enforcement can act on and so that our folks feel safe in our community and walking in the street. There is one other component of what we're experiencing, I think, and I think it's just a little bit of bigger city growing pains. We're going to have all kinds of folks in and around our downtown that may be unfamiliar to us, and that's okay. The lawlessness component, not okay, mm-hmm. but it's all right that we have people that we don't recognize that may look different from us in our downtown.
So the third issue is related in terms of low income and workforce housing, and with Amazon building in the West Plains and the new car factory that's potentially going to be built there, we already have a low enough vacancy rate in terms of rental housing. What are the roles of the city and county in making sure that enough of that housing is built so that we're not driving more people into homelessness because they can't afford what's out there?
So we've done some interesting research lately on what affordable actually means. And it's very interesting that we don't all speak the same language on what affordability means. Basically, the median household price in Spokane is affordable if you apply our median household income. But what it really doesn't speak to is very low income and what things contribute to creating vulnerable families. We've been working a lot with our community housing and human services folks to try to get upstream with the data. Once somebody is experiencing homelessness, the system has failed. So we're trying to figure out how do we make an investment to see what a vulnerable family looks like before failure occurs so that we can develop support programs in advance of that. The idea being keep people in their current residence rather than finding a break in the system. We've had some amazing conversations with our partners at Avista, thinking about what might we do from a utility cost perspective or even from a data perspective to understand what the burdens are that are driving folks into homelessness. If you look at the investments that have occurred over the last many, many years, again, largely state and federal dollars invested in housing and homing programs, the investments occur post-failure, and we really have to turn the system back and look at how do we sustain people in their residences. In terms of capacity for housing availability, I have a lot of confidence in the market, and we're seeing that react as we're seeing growth out on the West Plains. We're seeing housing come in behind that. I think our challenge in the city is we need to have a great strategy for all kinds of housing. We need housing replacement. We need all income levels of housing development, or what we've seen in the past will continue to happen, which is we see new housing develop outside of the city, and we create what Mayor Condon refers to as the donut city, where all the services are internal and all the residents are external. It's not a good model.
Follow up on that is we have not only a low income housing issue, we have a housing issue that's coming, and as part of it, you know, it's a two-edged sword. We're a victim of our own success. Yeah. As you know, we have a number of new airmen coming into Fairchild Air Force Base, and they're not obviously all going to live on the base, and where are they going to live? And if you bring in the Amazons and you bring in the Mullins, if they fully develop and stuff, you know, we've got a hot market. And of course, that puts pressure on the lower income folks when you have shortages of housing. We have a steering committee that looks at the Further Growth Management Act, that looks at these things on population allocations. Where's your growth occurring? How should you allocate, which, you know, generates your land use designations and stuff. And, you know, these folks are very dedicated elected officials and some citizen representatives on it. And I think that's going to be a very, very interesting topic for the next year about on one hand, we're so glad to see all these folks come. They're good for all of us, but we also have to figure out where we're going to put all these folks. So,
any issues that I didn't ask you about that are important that you're working together on or that you think are pretty bright on the radar screen, so to speak?
I think we are seeing a new model of how local governments can govern. And I think that what we're learning is a lot from the PDA, the West Plains PDA. The cooperation that it takes to develop those relationships and bring in businesses and stuff, and how you're sharing revenues and you're funding your PDAs because we don't have a port district. I think that somewhere down the road, it'd probably be past my career, but somewhere down the road, when people look back and stuff and say, you know, that was kind of the start of a change in how we even view how we govern locally. This way may be superior to the way we've always done it.
So explain to me why you think this is revolutionary is a little strong word, but why you think this is important.
Well, what part of the reason is, you know, we had and Teresa, you know, has been an ally of this. I'll just give you an example. Here's what the old way was. It was a zero sum game. Okay. You build up your tax base, I'll come and annex it. You lose all and I get all and everything else. In the West Plains, and it started with joint ownership of the airport, is what if, and that was the start of it, what if it wasn't a zero-sum game anymore? What if the payback for all of this is really on the back end where people buy homes and they shop downtown and they go to the valley to shop and, you know, the revenue, you know, comes on the back end of these investments? What would it look like? Well, That's what it looks like. It looks like an Amazon. It looks like possible Mullen coming in, where it looks like somebody leaving going, I couldn't tell if it was a city county employee, you know, in there. There were all community folks, you know, that were trying to, and even the revenue portions of that, how those tax dollars are divvied up to provide services and stuff. I think it could possibly be a template for how you could govern your local communities.
And I think revolutionary actually is the right word. I mean, when we talk to other communities, they just kind of look at us like, how did you accomplish this? And I think from a practical perspective, it completely changes the way we view one another because of who's sitting at the table. The West Plains PDA board is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. When you have a council president and a county commissioner and two execs from city and county sitting at the table together with our partner at the airport, you can't help but find ways to integrate and rethink how we do things. And that relationship builds, that trust builds, and it feeds into whatever the next opportunity looks like. So I think Jerry's absolutely right. I think it's the kernel of the future of how governments can work interactively in the future.
So let's get back to that transition question then. Do you think that will continue even regarding who the next mayor will be, who the next council president, is it bigger than a political change?
Absolutely it is. Absolutely it is. And that was really the intent. It was really folks were incredibly thoughtful about how these boards were assembled. The Spokane Regional Emergency Communications Board is another great example. It was intentionally formed with operations folks, not with elected, so that there wasn't any sort of turnover in electeds affecting that board. This one is like, you've got to have, the West Plains PDA, a great example, you must have your legislative leader, your mayoral appointment, your elected folks at the county. You've got to have those people at the table. So regardless of who's sitting in Jerry and I's jobs, those positions will sit at that table and it will really perpetuate this thing that we've created.
Teresa Sanders is the administrator for the city of Spokane. She was joined in our studio by Jerry Gemmel, the CEO for Spokane County. Inland Journalist, Spokane Public Radio's public affairs program. Our podcast is updated several times a week. You can subscribe to it in Apple Podcasts, NPR One, or Google Play, or find it on the Inland Journal page at the Spokane Public Radio website. Send your comments and story ideas to inlandjournal@kpbx.org. I'm glad you joined us. I'm Doug Nadvornik.